Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Known, presidential birthday bashes are certainly nothing new.
Happy birthday to you.
President Obama will be serenaded by the somewhat more serene Jennifer Hudson, assisted by jazz great Herbie Hancock, here at Chicago's legendary Aragon Ballroom. For this event, about 1,000 tickets were made available to the general public, but the evening with the president will set you back just over $35,000.
Right, no problem. I'll just write a check.
That's too much for me.
You can't go?
No.
Busy?
No, I can't afford to go.
It goes without saying that plenty of prominent Democrats will find it in their schedule and their pocketbooks to pack the Aragon's Moorish interior. But not everyone is hopping on the birthday bandwagon. State GOP Chairman Pat Brady contends that on the heels of what's been going on the last 2 weeks in Washington, if nothing else, the president's timing is terrible.
I hope he's concentrated on getting this economy going again. We're nearing a double-dip recession. We've lost 125,000 jobs here in Illinois just since he took office.
Happy birthday.
All right, you get the point. The hypocrite is at it again. He said we all have to chip in our fair share. He attacked millionaires and billionaires, and he's inviting them to his birthday party at $35,000 a head. And $10,000 for a picture with Alfred E. Newman, okay? But, you know, the truth is, I don't expect anything different from him or anybody else who arises to that level. There's all, let's put it, anyone who has driven to rise to that level has a certain degree of psychopathology that requires, I would say, a degree in psychiatry to understand. So he's no different in that regard. It's just that he's more apparent than some who try to hide it. You know what I'm saying? But today is a sad day. It's a sad moment. Now that the battle is over and we know that we lost and America's finished and that the communist socialists have won, you know, like reality is setting in again. We thought maybe we could make a change. And I'm afraid that the forces of destruction are too great. And I wanted to talk about the rise and fall of the United States of America. Because it's been written that all democracies that existed prior to ours generally lasted between 225 and 250 years. We celebrated, well, around our 235th anniversary as a nation. We're right in the middle of that cycle where most democracies die. And as a result of the grotesque entitlement state, we're likely to disappear within a very short period of time. The only way America can be saved is by understanding that the entitlement mentality, Medicare, Medicaid, the environment, Social Security, the entitlement mentality, welfare, the entitlement mentality, lawsuits, and the largesse of the state proposed by Harry Reid, Obama, and the entire pack of Democrat socialists, the only way we can survive is by reigning in entitlements. I'd also like to tell you that I'm slightly depressed today, or shall I say upset, because a true giant died over the weekend, which I've been holding from you. One of radio's great giants died. And that's Rick Buckley, president of WR Radio, died after suffering a brain embolism. And frankly, he is truthfully one of the greats in the history of radio. He became president of WOR's parent, Buckley Broadcasting, in 1972, taking over from his father. He was known in the industry as a great advocate for local radio and its place in the communities that his stations existed in. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Buckley knew that the listeners came first, and he will never be replaced, and his legacy will live on through the power and commitment of his radio stations, primarily my number one affiliate, WOR New York. You should know that this station has been around a very long time, and although the obituary in the vile Daily News mentions people who have ratings that are unknown, They refuse to mention that Michael Savage is a very, very proud member of the WOR family. And all I can say is thank you to the Buckley family for having me on your station. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's begin with Patricia in Florida. Go ahead, Patricia. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. Tomorrow is my birthday also. I much preferred sharing it with the Queen Mother than the one in the White House. And I'm not going to charge anybody $35,000.
Isn't he embarrassed to charge $35,000? Isn't it obvious that people are paying him that? It's a form of graft. What are they paying $35,000 for? Because he's so handsome? What are they paying it for? To watch the man gloat with his head back? What is the $35,000 going to get them? It's going to gain access to the president where they can get some kind of favor.
I'm sick of the term shared sacrifice. If I hear that one more time, I'm going to have a...
Yeah, well, he's a hypocrite. We understand that. Shared sacrifice would mean I'm not going to have a birthday party. I'm going to donate the money to the poor. A couple of weeks and maybe feed a village in Somalia. Maybe she would avoid one more trip around the world with her entourage. Maybe she could fire half of her personal staff. You know, it's all such double talk. It's beyond belief. The only reason they get away with it is because of the vermin in the media, like those of the Daily News. Okay? It's as simple as that. I mean, it's the same exact story. Naples, Florida. Rich, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hi, Mike. This is... I feel like I've been punched in the stomach, and I'm in a Cloud and Piven nightmare where they're increasing the government, social programs and the...
Right. $5 trillion more. You know, did you hear my show yesterday? The number of limousines under Obama has not doubled. It's gone up about 40% from Bush's. And the amount of money spent on the limousines, we broke it down per car, is about 5.3. What was it yesterday? $4.3 million per limousine, including staff, parking, garages, insurance. How in the heck does Obama spend $4 million per limousine? Is this not an example of everything wrong with government?
I've got a couple solutions.
It's right out of the Soviet Union playbook, where those in the government lived large. They had the dachas, the country estates. They were driven around in bulletproof limousines with Secret Service bodyguards in the ex-Soviet Union. And this is what's going on in the Democrat Socialist Party of Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. It's frightening to see the American people are so stupid. They don't even see this. They don't see it. And at the same time that we keep hearing about the phony Arab Spring, which is nothing but the rise of Islamism across the Arab Crescent, and it was orchestrated by George Soros, by Jimmy Carter, by Zbigniew Brzezinski, and by Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and the other know-nothings in the White House, the Arab Spring is bringing about the worst kind of Islamic terror the world has ever seen. At the same time that we see Mubarak, who was our greatest ally in the world's greatest Muslim nation, Egypt, perfect, no, violent, yes, but our ally, and in a country like that, he did, frankly, I think, a pretty good job controlling the Islamists. They wheel him into a cage in a gurney, and they humiliate this man, and our country sits here gloating about it, the vermin in the media basically snickering at him, while Assad's tanks blast all of northern Syria a day after 150 were killed in two cities. Even though the so-called international community, which doesn't really exist, is condemning it, Assad of Syria unleashed his bloody tank assault over all of northern Syria, a 20,000 square kilometer area almost the size of Israel. Assad is now waging war on the 3.5 million inhabitants of Hama. 3.5 million inhabitants are under siege by tanks and by airplanes, and this is after Assad, the murderous dictator of Syria, inflicted a one-day death toll of 150 to 120 in Hama, 30 deaths in Deir al-Dazur, and more than 1,000 injured. Ladies and gentlemen, we live in one of the most despicable times in history. It's astounding to me that Syria gets away with this, while Mubarak, our best friend in the Middle East for well over 40 years, is humiliated while America does nothing. I'll be right back.
Savage.
a Detroit and barbecue dream. You get the treat of the week. But when you dig that real fine jive with the welcome beat, you fall in there, lose your lead at the house of
the Detroit barbecue ribs. Anybody ever read Blues for Mr. Charlie by James Baldwin back in the day? Does anyone know what I'm referring to? My references are a little obscure, I admit. I mean, I grew up in the age of the beatniks, the jazz age. Jack Kerouac, John Coltrane, Timothy Leary, you know that. So when I make a reference such as Blues for Mr. Charlie by James Baldwin, it's because I really believe that that particular piece of writing today would be appropriate. Unfortunately, James Baldwin can't be with us. He left this plane of existence quite a while ago. Obama celebrates debt hike, 1,700-calorie burger binge. Why not? He's a nice young man. Did you go to my website and see about the HIV explosion in the Middle East with the coming of the Arab Spring? What liberalism has wrought in the Middle East. I mean, you got to look at it. When it was a very strict area, they had a very low HIV rate. Looking for my own website now. I found this obscure story. I couldn't sleep. I was up at 4:30. I like to get up about 19 hours before I go on the air. You know, that would be the equivalent if you'd go to work at 8 o'clock, getting up at like 2 in the morning. What are you going to do? You get up and your mind works. What can you do at 4 o'clock in the morning? I go to work. I go from screen to screen. I leave a television screen. I go to sleep. I wake up. I go to the computer screen. The show is over. I try to stay off the screen. I can only stay off an hour or two. Then I'm back on a screen. It's an addiction. I admit it. But it's opened up the whole world to me. I mean, where else would I know what's going on in the world but for the internet? If I looked around and I would be just like one of the cows walking around here in the San Francisco area, I mean, I wouldn't be a full human being. I'd be four-fifths a person. Most of them are not human beings. They're cows. They're walking around basically in a bovine state. They're concerned about where the next good meal will be found. And I don't mean the food. It's what they're going to read about in the local failed newspaper. What's the, you know, the hippest place to eat in? Where they can, if they find out they can't get a seat in it, they want to go there. It doesn't matter if the food is the worst garbage ever made. Some idiot, you know, drizzling strawberries on a steak is their idea of a... I'm not in a good mood. I'm in a rotten mood. Thank God I have two good guests today. At the bottom of the hour, I have my favorite Senator Inhofe, who's really, I frankly think he should run for president. He's actually going to come on this show and tell you how the conservative Republicans who voted against the debt limit were wrong because they weren't conservative enough. I couldn't believe it. I had a conversation with him. He'll be on. And then at 4:30, the second hour, everything's a different time now. A surprise guest, that's all. He'll tell you how her luggage was robbed on the road on a book tour by the TSA. What are they saying the acronym stands for now, TSA? What's a new acronym for it? Yeah. Air Force drops ethics training because of Bible verses. Christian just war theory was taught by chaplains for 20 years, but a certain Mr. Weinstein didn't like it. He created a fake group called the Watchdog Group, Military Religious Freedom Foundation, said that the course violated the constitutional separation of church and state. You know, if I were to have Mr. Weinstein on the show, Mickey Weinstein, the president of the so-called Military Religious Freedom Foundation, if I could have that rat on this show, I would ask Mickey Weinstein, who doesn't like the Bible verses, I'd ask Mr. Weinstein the following question. I'd say, Mickey Weinstein, if people like you founded America, would your ancestor have been permitted into the country? It's a simple question. And the answer is, of course, we don't know. But we do know that the reason his ancestors were permitted in the country is because America was founded by just Christians. Good Christians. When I say just, most of you don't understand English. You'll think I mean only Christians when I said just Christians, because most of you don't have the literacy level to understand what I just said. But Mr. Weinstein, who has a one-man vendetta against the military, in my opinion, attacked the military, even though it's been taught for 20 years, and said the use of Bible passage and other elements were just inappropriate, said Mickey Weinstein, the president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and he hailed the military's decision to suspend the course. Mickey Weinstein said, we're very pleased that the Air Force did it. Weinstein told a news show. Weinstein said, had they not done that, we would have filed an immediate class action lawsuit in federal court to force their hand. Weinstein, can I ask you why you hate Christians? Weinstein, can I ask you why you hate America? Weinstein, can I ask you who dropped you on your head as a child, Weinstein? Was it your father or your mother? Weinstein, can I ask you a question? Why do you hate Christians, America, and the military? When was it not for the Christians and the military, your ancestors would have been turned into... Fair enough for you, Weinstein? And Weinstein, while you're at it, you piece of garbage, you, why don't you visit Normandy and take a look at the large sea of crosses on the gravestones? Maybe you can run a campaign to get rid of the crosses on the gravestones, Weinstein. Maybe that would satisfy the sickness inside your soul, Weinstein. See, there's a lot of things that can get me angry if I let them, and that got me really angry. It gets me sick. Weinstein said the United States Air Force was promoting a particular brand of right-wing fundamentalist Christianity, said Weinstein. The main essence was that war is a natural part of the human experience, and it's something that is favored by this particular perspective of the New Testament, said Weinstein. Weinstein didn't like a particular segment of the scriptures that was taught by the New Testament book of Revelations. The passage, chapter 19, verse 11, describes Jesus as a mighty warrior, Weinstein said. Now, what Weinstein doesn't know is that it was not for the warrior mentality of the Christians he hates so much who rescued his ancestors from the ovens of Bergen-Belsen and Auschwitz, Mickey Wine wouldn't be here plaguing the United States of America. So I don't understand the mentality of liberals other than to say liberalism is a mental disorder. They want to castrate everybody because they were castrated at birth by their mentality. Since they were castrated at birth by their mentality, what they want to do is castrate the military that keeps them alive, and castrate the police who keep them safe on the streets. This is a castration anxiety of the highest order. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Just remember that.
Savage.
It is the rise and fall of the United States of America we're talking about right now, and it's a very sad day indeed when entitlements won during the budget debate and the average taxpayer lost. Joining us now is a, I don't know, maybe one of our only hopes left in this country. I spoke with the good Senator Inhofe this morning, and he has a lot to say about what just happened. He joins us now on the Savage Nation. Senator, thank you for being with us. Thanks for taking time out of your busy day. So you actually don't agree, even though you oppose the budget deal, you don't agree with some of your Republican cohorts. Is that correct?
No. Here's, you know who the big winner was in this whole thing? It was Obama. Oh. He sat back. He didn't have to participate. No matter what happened, he could take credit for it. He wasn't even in on it. I don't know whether he's playing golf or what he was doing. But he sat back, and the Republicans. Now, I have to say this, Michael. I went to the Senate floor and said on the floor several times in the last week what I'm about to tell you now, and yet nobody seems to, either they don't care or they don't understand. This whole problem that came along is not just the Democrats or the Republicans or the House or the Senate. It's one person. That's Obama, President Obama, President of the United States. He's the guy under our system that sends the budget to out. He's the one who develops that, and you look at and how many times, I can remember on your show, this is some time ago when he came out with his third budget, and I made the statement of how much he was talking about doing the, you know, more spending than all presidents combined since George Washington.
Yes.
And then all these deficits that he's doing. And nobody,
yes.
I think they're lost in the big figures. But let me just bring this concept into what happened to us 2 days ago. With this bill, it'll take us 10 years to undo about half of what Obama has done in three years.
Mm.
In 3 years, the Obama's deficit spending has totaled just under $5 trillion. And this bill only cuts $2.4 trillion in deficits. And that's over 10 years. So over 10 years, they cut less than $2.5 trillion. And he, in 3 years, increased that deficit by $5 trillion. Or just look at fiscal year 2012.
Oh, well, that's the kind of math that a community organizer is capable of.
Well, but let's look right now, just 1 year, a year coming up, 2012.
Yeah.
Spending is cut. Now, first of all, he takes the cuts and he puts them, I say he was a big part of this, but the Republicans and Democrats kind of got together on this thing and said the world's going to come to an end if we don't do something. But if you take the $2.4 trillion over 10 years, only $44 billion is in this first year. This amounts to less than about 5% of Obama's $1.5 trillion deficit just for this year alone. In 1 year, the bill cuts $44 billion, but in the same year, Obama has increased the deficit by $1.5 trillion. And I don't know why. I think, Michael, it's a lot of... First of all, I used to say that Bill Clinton could say things that weren't true with greater conviction than anyone in the history of politics. This guy is greater.
Yes.
He's saying the same thing over and over. How many times have you heard him say that we only produce 3% of the world's natural resources, coal, oil, and gas, and yet we consume 25%? It's an outrageous lie, but he keeps saying it over and over and over again. So anyway, I got that off my chest.
Senator, I want to ask you something. You are the second ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and you must be quite concerned since he has an eye towards slashing defense and national security spending. Isn't that true?
Well, it is, but let's look at let's first of all set this up over what he's done since he's president. In his first year, Michael, when he came out with his budget, I went over to Afghanistan so that I'd have a good backdrop of the tanks and all that, and I could respond to his budget. That was the budget in his first year that he took away our only fifth-generation fighter, the F-22. He took away our best lift capability, the C-17. He did away with the Future Combat System. He did away with our ground-based interceptor in Poland. I remember you and I talked about that.
Yes.
Oh, wait, that must 2 years ago, I guess. All of that he did in just his first year. He has decimated the military. But in this thing, we could actually be, military could be cut by $492 billion, and it would be done by a super committee. Now, to vote for this bill and give all this power to a super committee and not know who is on the super committee, the only thing I know for sure is I won't be on it. I'm sure I won't be invited. But,
Wait a minute. Maybe
automatically.
But Senator, you're not looking at it from his perspective. Maybe Mr. Putin will be on the committee.
Or some of his friends in the Middle East.
Maybe one of the Saudi princes could be put on there by Nancy Pelosi. No, this is crazy. We understand we're losing our democracy. How do we turn it around, Senator?
Well, the only way you can do it is defeating him. You know, the Republicans will take the United States Senate. I don't think anyone's going to argue that that's not going to happen. I would predict here on your show that we will be doing it by around 5 to 6 votes to spare. Now, that's a huge success we'll have.
However, in 2012, correct?
2012. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what he's at him, though, and I know that his popularity does go up and down, but every time he has one of his opportunities, his golden opportunities, I have to say he's good. This guy is
persuasive. I'm one of the only hosts on the right who say he's the smartest man that ever sat in the Oval Office in many ways. It doesn't mean I approve of his policies, but the man is very intelligent.
Well, there's no question about that. But my big thing, I haven't been saying much. You don't see me talking very much about the debt and the deficit because my thing is in the regulations. What he's doing through the EPA probably is costing more or as much as the tax increases and the spending increases. You just look at what I was the bad guy that 10 years ago took on this whole greenhouse gas thing, the cap and trade, and now he can't get it through, so he's trying to do it with through regulation. Michael, if he's successful in doing that, all this talk about what are we going to do about $44 billion here or $20 billion here, did you know that if he is successful in getting the cap and trade done through regulation as opposed to legislation, the tax it would cost the American people would be in the range between $300 and $400 billion. Now that's not me talking. We're talking about the Wharton School. We're talking about MIT, all others.
You mean if he pushes through this so-called cap and trade to control the invisible and unreal global warming myth?
Yeah, that's what it costs. And Lisa Jackson is one that I'm probably the only Republican will say that I respect her. I respect her because she actually, when you ask her a direct question, she'll tell the truth. I asked her the question and said, let's say that we pass through regulation, cap and trade, or the Markey bill, or the old McCain-Lieberman bill, or the, you know, or the Boxer bill. All of cap and trade is cap and trade. It costs the same no matter if it's in
form
of regulation. I said, that's going to be a tax increase in the American people between $300 and $400 billion. Now, if we were to pass, at that time it was the Waxman-Markey bill that was prominent, if we're going to pass this, how much would that reduce greenhouse gas emissions worldwide? Her answer, it would not do it, because that's only in the United States. And in fact, Michael, you could argue it would increase it, because our jobs have to go where they can find power. And you know what China's doing? They're cranking out three of these coal-fired generating plants every week.
Oh, sure. Well, they're smarter than we are. They're not worried about fake data on global warming that was made up by individuals at, I think it was Norwich University in England. But look, where are we going to go with this? I mean, he's on the road to a catastrophe for America, and the president's having a birthday bash where you have to pay $35,000 a head. It's unheard of. How does he get away with this?
Well, that's cheaper than it was down in Texas. He was charging, I think, $80,000 down there.
Oh, cheaper? You mean it's cheaper in Chicago?
Well, here, let me answer your question. I'm looking at this as, first of all, Republicans in terms of doing something about these regulations, doing about stopping him from doing away with our ability to generate energy. How many of our listeners know that just as of 8 months ago, they came out, and no one could argue with this, the United States of America has the largest recoverable reserves in oil, gas, and coal of any country in the world. We could be totally free from the Middle East if we were just to develop our own resources. He's the one, and along with the Democrats, who won't let us do it. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is, between now and election time, there are 23 Democrats that are coming up for re-election in the Senate. Of the 23, there are 16 that I have referred to as endangered species. Four of them have already retired. So, you know, that's the rest of them, and I could name, you know, the senators, they're occasionally trying to vote like Republicans so they can hold that up and try to survive the 2012 election, which is going to be just like the 2010, in my opinion. So I think we'll get some good votes out of them. I think we'll be able to stop some of this stuff. Then we'll come along and hopefully defeat him. And, you know.
But, Senator, you are a leading Republican. You're a true conservative. You know how much respect I have for you, and it's very difficult for me to say. I don't have much respect for many people in Congress. Can I ask you up front, right here, not trying to set you up, do you have any inclination to run for an office beyond senator?
Oh, absolutely not. First of all, I'm too old. Secondly, I've got 20 kids and grandkids that I enjoy a lot more than I enjoy Washington. So they
Oh, God. Well, that's why we need you. We need someone like you to run for the presidency, frankly. You're the only one I have faith in who would do the right thing. But let's leave that for another time. When you mentioned that we have our own energy resources, what are they primarily in? Shale, coal, oil, or all three?
And this is the way this guy does these things. I had the honor of responding to his energy talk on, it might have been Fox, I'm not sure, some TV show. And that's when he said he was trying to pacify those of us, the casual thinkers in terms of energy. And he was saying we need to have good, clean, we have an abundance of natural gas and all this stuff. And then at the very end of his speech, he said, well, we're going to have to do something about all these procedures, such as hydraulic fracturing. Well, you mentioned shale. Shale is where we're finding all of the huge, huge reserves in natural gas and oil, but primarily natural gas. But they're all in tight formations. I'm from Oklahoma. Michael, the first hydraulic fracturing was done in 1948 in my state of Oklahoma. There's never been one case, one confirmed case of groundwater contamination in 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, he appointed this, Stephen Chu, his Secretary of Energy, is now the one who's supposed to be addressing the whole thing on hydraulic fracturing, and he's already made the statements that he is going to do everything he can to stop hydraulic fracturing. So, you know,
So in other words, he's already eliminated one of our primary natural sources of energy that is found on our own soil, under the earth, would take us away from Arab dependence, free us up from the headlock that the Arabs have us in, reduce the cost of energy. And already his energy secretary said, no, you're not getting at that. I mean, this is unbelievable.
Not only just the energy secretary, but this, John, what was his last name, this newest guy, John Bryson. He was a nominee to, in fact, he's one I have a hold on. I think we can beat him. Another lady named Water, W-O-D-D-E-R, we have a hold on her, too. She was the one who talked about hydraulic fracturing, and when I asked her the question in a confirmation hearing last week, she said, well, I was working for another group then. I was forced to say what I said. So,
do they actually know what they're talking about? Are these Ivy League eggheads who don't really know what they're saying?
I think they are, but you stop and think. Look at every time either Barbara Boxer or John Kerry, they talk about we have to do away, we have to get free from our dependence on the Middle East for oil, for energy. And then they say we have to do away with oil, gas, and coal. Well, you can't run this machine called America without that. All that would do is make us even more dependent. But that's being logical. And we're talking about Washington.
These are illogical people. There's a disconnect between what they say and the reality of the world, Senator. We know this. The way they're thinking, they'll put us into rickshaws with no motors permitted in America, and we'll wind up a backwards pre-industrial age a nation.
Well, that's true. And, if you look, I can remember, kind of look back wistfully at the days when the financial backbone of the Democratic Party in Washington was the trial lawyers.
Then
it became, but today it's the far left environmentalists who want to shut down this machine. I'm talking about MoveOn.org and, George Soros, Michael Moore.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Senator, you've got them all. Look, I know you are with your family, and I know you took time out from your vacation. And I don't want to keep you any longer because, as you said earlier, what else is left at the end of the day but the kids and the grandkids? Isn't that it? That's where you really want to be today. I know it.
All 20 of them, Michael. You're right.
20? You really have 20 grandchildren? That's astounding.
No, kids and grandkids. I put them all together.
You have four children, right?
Yes, correct. Uh-huh.
And each child has four children?
That's correct. And then they got to count the husbands and wives.
Oh, God, I forgot them. I wasn't doing my math right. Well, Senator Inhofe, you have a biblical blessing because you must be a very good man. I think God has rewarded you for your goodness. That's all I can say.
You are right. Thanks so much, Michael.
God bless you. Thank you, and God bless America. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There is no dialogue. And to take the leader of the free world and embarrass him in front of the international community, most of us have dreamed and hoped for more. But the president was mugged. And when you survive a mugging, you don't talk about what happened to the president. You say, hey, we survived. And thank God that this great country has survived.
That's Charlie Rangel. Who mugged America. For the years he's been on the House Ways and Means Committee, he's talking about the president was mugged because there was a debate. You hear? You hear the world they're living in? Play the doggy song. Not funny. Off. Here's an email from a friend in the radio business, a very top executive whose name will be unnamed. He just listened to my interview with Senator Inhofe, and he said, Savage, great interview with Senator Inhofe, hung on every word. You don't need Bachman when your relationship with guys like Senator Inhofe are as strong as demonstrated in that excellent interview. Keep up the great work. And thanks for acknowledging Mr. Buckley. That was real class. Nicely done. What else? He says, good luck with the novel, Abuse of Power. It sounds like you're only approaching your 50th birthday. You sound younger and fresher than ever. Congrats on all. Thank you very much. I do feel better. What's wrong with me? That's what worries me, is I sound better and feel better. The staff keeps taking, these guys are 20 years younger than me, Beowulf and Charles. They all take vacations. They're out Monday, Tuesday. That one goes to the beach. The other one goes to the coast. And I'm here slogging away, getting younger by the day. today I had a discussion with Mrs. S. She says, you sound like you need a vacation. I said, well, I do need a vacation. I said, but every time she says it, I have an anxiety attack. Because I said, there's nowhere I want to go. You know that. You know it already. I've been everywhere. I don't want to go anywhere. She said, well, you complain about the heat, but there's no heat out here on the West Coast. It's gorgeous weather. You need socks at night and flannel pajamas and parkas in the morning. So she said, well, how would you like to go where there's snow? I said, well, let's start. What are you thinking of? She said, well, I looked up on the map, and she said, there's snow right now in the, on Tierra del Fuego. I said, okay, book the Tierra del Fuego Hilton. I'm not going to go to Tierra del Fuego. You know, the Juan de Fuca Straits. I mean, where am I going to? McMurdo Sound Marriott. Could you imagine being on the 28th floor of the McMurdo Sound Harriet? Marriott, rather, Harriet sounds better than Marriott. Maybe they should change the name of the hotel chain to the Harriet chain. But I really don't want to go to South America. What am I going to do? Take up the tango? I have no idea. What would I do down there? Eat calamari? I have no. Why would I want to go to a country like Argentina? Just for the snow? For the Andes? I watch Locked Up Abroad. I want nothing to do with South America. You ever watch Locked Up Abroad with a National Nat Geo? I'm a TV addict, I admit it. I enjoy watching certain shows. One of the shows I enjoy is Locked Up Abroad. I'm supposed to have sympathy for drug runners. You love it? Every one of them ran cocaine or marijuana or gold, whatever. They were sneaking it in or out of a country, and they got caught. And you're supposed to sit here and say, boo-hoo. What did they expect? And they all say, well, I knew I shouldn't have gone through with it. If only I had not done it that day. And then they're back home, usually in England. They're usually limeys with bad teeth, married to some circus clown 20 years later. You know, with two children working on a bakery, as a bakery truck driver. It's right out of Alfred Hitchcock, Psycho. It's unbelievable. You ever watch that? Does anyone watch Locked Up Abroad? It's one of my favorite programs to see the lowness of humanity and the idiocy.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Personally, I've been here for a long time. I have a home in Nevada that I haven't seen in months. My pomegranate trees are, I'm told, blossoming, and some pomegranates on them. I have some fig trees and roses and stuff that I just haven't seen. So I have constituents that I'm anxious to see, friends I need to visit with, relatives I need to visit with. So as soon as we can complete our work, I would like to move as quickly as I can to the summer recess period.
So Harry Reid is going home to tend to his pomegranate trees, his fig trees, and his roses in Nevada. Now that the debt deal is done, what do you think the various members of Congress have gone home to their districts to do? Harry Reid wants a summer recess to tend to his pomegranate trees and his fig trees. I would assume Nancy Pelosi wants to go home and work on her lasagna. I would assume Barbara Boxer wants to go home and work on what? What could she work on? I have no idea. What would be in Barbara Boxer's backyard that she'd want to go home and work on? A new highway to nowhere? A new lawsuit to somewhere? It's an interesting topic because I don't want to do the news. We had Senator Inhofe in the last hour who was on. It was really enough on the debt deal. He's 100% right. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. I could go to my website and read you the news and really get you sick. It's horrible. The news is worse than ever. Here's a guy who yesterday was attacking millionaires and billionaires, and he's hosting them the next second. And today, borrowing tops 100% of GDP, as I told you it would. It's frightening. We have the same debt structure as Ecuador. Actually, Ecuador is in better shape than we are, I think. U.S. debt shot up $230 billion to reach 100% of gross domestic product after the government's debt ceiling was lifted, Treasury figures showed today. So now our debt is equal to that of, where is the country? I want to get it right. I think I remember reading this. What was the debt? Our debt is equivalent to that of Belgium. The new borrowing took place overnight and put us in a league with highly indebted countries like Italy and Belgium. Monday, Tuesday, Sunday, Wednesday, Tuesday. Michael, look, I can drive. Sunday, Monday, Wednesday. We're in Belgium. Belgium has nothing going for it. Belgium. Last time I was in Belgium, I had moule. That was about the only thing I remember about Belgium. Everyone was like, the whole country was sort of like a black and white experience. Even though it was in the summer that I was there many, many years ago, it seemed to me like a black and white, you know, drab. I had moule late at night, like 1 o'clock in the morning once, and the police approached me, some gendarme, because I was walking the streets late at night. I guess he thought I was cruising. I wasn't cruising. I couldn't sleep. Where I come from, it was morning. What's his business that I had moules at 2 in the morning with a Belgian beer and walked around the streets? I'll never go back there. Italy, I was there twice in my life. I do like the Italian people. I liked Italy up to a point. The beach is horrible. You know, I remember when I was young, I went to Italy. I'm thinking of vacation now. How disappointed I was in the beaches outside of Rome. Horrible. Garbage-strewn, rocky, terrible. Nothing going for it. Jones Beach was better than that. And the pizza in New York was better than Roman pizza. That's the thing I'll never forget as long as I live. The pizza in New York was better than it was in Rome. How is that possible? The best pizza I ever had was Greek pizza. I mean, made by Greeks in Marblehead, Massachusetts when I lived there one winter. Go figure. In New England, the best pizza in the world. Was it Greeks? Yeah, the Greeks made very good pizza. How did they do that? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I don't want to talk about the news. I really don't. I would rather talk about phagocytosis. Those of you who understand what I just said, it is a medical term. Phagocytosis is a medical term that I recall from my days of studying about free radical pathology and antioxidants. And phagocytosis, you can't even say words today. They're in the medical books for fear somebody's liable to complain to somebody. I do have a doctorate in epidemiology and human nutrition. I do remember my studies of antioxidants. Everyone says antioxidant, they don't know what it means. Oh, yes, I'm taking my antioxidants. You don't know what it means, but you're taking them. It's like saying I'm eating my carrots. You're not a rabbit. Now, it is true that you should eat carrots once in a while and your broccoli. But how many of you really know what a free radical is? You have no idea what it is. Harry Reid is a free radical. Nancy Pelosi is a free radical. Andrea Mitchell is a free radical. Charlie Rangel is a free radical. Barack Obama is the number one free radical. Problem is no one scavenged any of them yet. That's why I'm talking about free radical pathology. They're out of control. They're devouring the body politic. We absolutely need antioxidants to control them. See, I could put this into a medical context, and we might actually get somewhere. You're talking about a degenerative disease. What they're doing to the body politic is like a degenerative disease that's about to kill a patient. So if I told you that I've written about the free radical theory of aging in 1972 in a popular book called Nutrition Against Aging, you'd say, ah, but sure, he didn't do that. Why, we don't know him. We have no idea who he is, even though he wrote the book. We'll deny he wrote the book because we're like the ex-Soviet Union, where anyone who disagrees with our communist policies are immediately ejected from the cult of left-wing mania. So as I say, you can learn an awful lot about life by studying biology and disease mechanisms. And in many ways, what Harry Reid and Obama and Pelosi and all are doing to this country is the equivalent of what free radicals do to our cells. Invade, cause biological damage, and then kill the cell. They don't understand it because none of them really went to, I would say they don't even understand what I just said. They probably turn it over to the Secret Service because they're so intolerant of inflammation. I'm actually a safety net for the nation, when you think about it. The people who hate me the most need me the most. I had a doctor friend that once told me that we are addicted to that which we are allergic to. I said, wait, say that again, Dr. Cathcart. He said, we are usually addicted food-wise now to that which we are allergic. And you know, I actually found out he was right. The things, in other words, that we like the most in foods are the things that get us the sickest. It's 100% true. Let's say you have a sugar addiction. That's the thing that's getting you the sickest. Okay, that's an example. And a guy like Harry Reid, who wants to go home and work on his pomegranates, is addicted to big government spending. Big government and spending, spending, spending. They don't understand that they're mentally deranged. They don't understand that they are destroying the nation that they claim to love. And what they don't understand is that in order to stop this, we need some antioxidants like Michael Savage, like the true conservatives, the fiscal conservatives, who understand that if free radicals are let to run wild in a cell or in a body, they'll destroy it, in the same way that free radicals who are running wild in our Congress are destroying the body politic. Do you get it? Do you understand why my background in biomedicine gives me the intelligence and the genius to understand things that fools can't understand at all? I'm going to tell you about lipid peroxide formation. I'm going to tell you about vitamin E and glutathione peroxidase. I'm like vitamin E for this country. I'm the best thing the country could ever have. You need more of me. I am vitamin E, and they are the free radicals who are destroying the country. They're like ozone. Charlie Rangel, Barack Obama, Harry Reid, the whole left-wing cabal, they're like ozone damaging the cell. I mean, we hear about ozone, and ozone is going to damage us. Well, it's true. But what about politicians who damage us? And then they take people like me who are the antioxidants and they say that we're the danger, we're the bad guys, the fools on television. I listen to them, I cannot believe it. The worst of them now, actually the worst. Oh, am I glad I didn't give him an interview, that fraud from England. He won't be long for the TV. Martin Bashir, one of the biggest fakers in the history. He thinks that the pseudo-British accent, which for him is real, but it's pseudo for him because he's not even... The fake British accent that he puts on, he thinks he adds sophistication. None of the limeys make it in television. They don't make it. The American people don't go for that fake British accent. You know, he wanted to interview me when he was with 2020. He tried to con me over and over again on the British ban, and I wouldn't take the bait. He sent me letters about his illnesses and this and that. I knew he was a left-wing operative and a fanatic. My God, I watched this guy. I thought he had some degree of integrity and intelligence. He's worse than Andrea Mitchell on her worst days of the month. And I don't mean that in any derogatory fashion. I mean when she's not functioning well on television is what I mean by that. So again, as I say, if I talk about free radicals and what free radicals do to a cell and the degenerative process of free radicals on the cell, and I tell you that we need antioxidants like Michael Savage and fiscal conservatives, those of you who understand the rudiments understand what I'm saying. But fools like those, Martin Bashir, who's the guy with the tight dungarees whose only claim to fame is that he's the stupidest man on television? Who is that idiot who called the Arab Spring something good for the world? That moron should be arrested. He should be arrested and taken to The Hague for what he did putting out that propaganda. Who is that guy with the tight dungarees from West Hollywood? That fool. Anderson Cooper. He thinks because they had tight dungarees and had a good behind and they walked around with a BlackBerry, they were good. What a moron. How do these guys function? How do they function? They're so stupid. I never saw anything like it. A showgirl's son like that. Pretty boy. Another pretty boy. Get him a job in the endogenous chemical mediators of inflammation. Shall I talk about the endogenous chemical mediators of inflammation? Guys like Anderson Cooper are the equivalent of histamine. They're the equivalent of an inflammatory reaction in the body politic. They don't even know it, though. They're like a foot abscess. Anderson Cooper may look good, but he's like a foot abscess that you have to cure. Does that make sense to you? Andrea Mitchell is like edema of the lungs that you need surgery for. What's the difference? Shall I talk about polymorphonuclear leukocytes, neutrophils, and phagocytosis again? I'm not going to do it. I'll talk instead about arachidonic acid when I come back. Savage.
The American people want to see jobs. They want to see the economy improve. But a lot of Democrats, your members, the leader of the Congressional Black Caucus, feel that this deal is a bad deal and it will lead to a slowing of the economy. Congressman Cleaver called it a Satan sandwich.
Again, get off my show. Anderson Cooper is like a foot abscess. Andrea Mitchell is like Typhoid Mary, a silent spreader of liberalism. You know what I don't like about it? I'm trying to figure out what it is about it that grates me the most. One, the government media complex that she was married to Alan Greenspan, who wrecked the economy. Single-handedly probably mugged the economy, Alan Greenspan, in my opinion. Married to this woman, who is like a silent spreader of liberalism. It's this idea of being breezy. Does that word make sense? There's something about it, like she does it in a breezy manner, like she's on top of everything. With that pseudo-sophisticated Beltway, Washington, New York, a pseudo-British accent, where they occasionally turn a word. You've heard that. Usually a mark of someone who's hiding a very, very deep inferiority complex because of their background. I don't really know a background, nor am I trying to disparage her in any way. I'm trying to disparage her in every way, not in any way. And that's a little different. I mean, try to disparage someone in every way, it's a little less personal than disparaging them in a specific way. I mean, I got to tell you the truth. So don't get me wrong. I don't know the person. I'm sure she's a perfectly horrible human being. But you take a guy like Anderson Cooper, I mean, the guy's ratings are so bad. The guy is so clueless as to what he is talking about. They show him every day in tighter and tighter, like V-shirts, and tighter dungarees. I mean, next it's going to be Anderson Cooper in a Abercrombie and Fitch ad. They'll show him in underwear in order to attain ratings in West Hollywood and the Upper West Side of Manhattan. You know what I have here on my desk, my broadcast desk in broadcast excellence? I went to the bank today to cash a check. I know it's crazy. No one does that. I don't like credit cards. I like to pay cash. It smells good. I grew up in the age where cash meant something. So if you have some of this worthless paper, we'll be glad to have you send it to the Savage Legal Fund. I mean, I grew up where you read a book, right? As opposed to a Kindle edition. You turn a page of a book, you know you're reading. Same with money. You spend money, you actually know what you're spending. What if we paid congressmen and senators in greenbacks, $100 bills every month, and they were forced to spend their money? No, that wouldn't work. You couldn't print enough money. So that wouldn't work. But I went to the Rite Aid drugstore today to buy. I like to buy things to see what the average person does. And I enjoy, going in stores occasionally. I went for little things, calamine lotion, because an old poison oak infection is flaring up. It's an interesting thing, poison oak, by the way. I had this 15 years ago on my right knee, on the inside knee. Every August, even though I don't go in the woods, it flares up. You don't realize that poison oak is a very serious attack on your body. And many of these immune threatening illnesses, even a thing like poison ivy, poison oak, stay with you for a very long time. They're like subclinical infections. Anyway, so I go in there for the Caladryl, terrific product. I'm surprised the FDA hasn't banned it yet because it actually works, making you go to some quack to give you an injection. And I get on the line, I like a couple of tubes of this and that, unguents and preparations and lotions. I got aspirin you get. I was trying to find Bayer, the white Bayer aspirin. Everything's yellow now. They use like yellow number 15. So I said, where is the white Bayer aspirin? They don't even make white aspirin anymore. Everything's colored for like morons, like jelly beans. I didn't want a jelly bean. I want an aspirin that's white, clinically white with less. I don't want coloring in it. I want the heart healthy, 83 milligram aspirin. I'm on the line, and ahead of me is a guy. He was from another country, let's put it to you that way, with a mask on, a surgical mask, which means he has an infectious disease like TB. And the guy has his mask pulled down under his chin, and he's speaking some gobbledygook language to the clerk, pulls out food stamps, pays for it. And I said to her, that man just probably has a disease. He had his mask down. And she was a very nice Hispanic lady. She said, what can I do? I work here. I said, lady, first of all, I'm going to pay you cash. I don't want you to give me any change. That's number one. And number two, I suggest you get one of those hand wipes and wipe your hands because this guy is running around dispensing an illness of some kind. He's like Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC. It's unbelievable to me how they get away with it. Andrea Mitchell should be forced to broadcast with a surgical mask on. I mean, as a warning. She should come with a warning label. And be forced to broadcast through a surgical mask.
Savage.
I'm
I had a lot of fun. I just vented a little bit in the last segment on the Savage Nation. I said Anderson Cooper's like a foot abscess. And this Andrea Mitchell is like Typhoid Mary, a silent spreader of liberalism, that she should be forced to broadcast through a surgical mask. I mean, I have to say these things because when you see how low MSNBC has gone and CNN, how they continue to support the unsupportable, how they support the free radicals who are destroying our body politic, and what we need are people like myself who are the antioxidants of our society. I'm like vitamin E. I'm like a dispersed tocopherol for this society. Joining us now is another antioxidant. Laura Ingraham joins us again on the Savage Nation. Laura, welcome.
Am I a dispersed? What is it? Triathlol? I can't even know what that is.
Your degree is not in science. You have a high-end law degree. You speak Russian. That's good enough for me. How's the book tour, Laura?
Yeah, of the Izing. The tour continues in about an hour. I'll be with all of the reasonable people in the Minneapolis area. You know, only in Minneapolis could you have Michelle Bachmann and Al Franken representing kind of 100 square miles. I mean, it's insane.
Unbelievable.
In Minneapolis, but, you know.
Unbelievable. What happened there? So, but has anything odd happened other than having your crosses robbed at an airport?
Yeah, well, Michael, I'm really glad I got to come on with you because a couple of things have happened which are really dovetail off of everything that you talk about on the show. And I got a huge response, by the way, from my first appearance with you from people all over the United States who listened to you, and it was unbelievable.
That's very nice. Look, I mean, Laura, you know you're a friend. Laura, you're a friend of mine, and you know that. And that's why I have you on the show, and your book is terrific. But you're suffering on a book tour. There's no question book tours are horrible, aren't they?
No. They're not. They're sometimes not fun. Well, but here's what happened.
What do you do in a hotel at night alone? I mean, some of them have to be horrible, like on some really bad hotels with like cinder block walls. Do you get some of those, or they're all high end hotels?
The good thing, Michael, is that if you lift up the mattresses, if there are no blood spots, then there are no.
Oh, stop it! You're talking about my trip to Cancun, right?
So there's no. I have had no bed bugs yet. Okay.
Oh God, no! But like, if you go to small towns, they put you up in the best hotel. They're usually like cinder block walls, right down on a motel level.
Well, you know, I just pretend I'm in Abu Ghraib.
What do you do? Go to the Coca-Cola machine a few times a night.
Yeah,
what can
just
you
go
do
to
in
the
it?
Ice machine and just call it a night. You know, just, you know, order out Domino's, and it's like I'm living my college days again. So Michael, listen to this. A couple weeks ago. You and I talked about this. I took on all these hip hop thugs, Chris Brown, you know, the guy who beat up Rihanna a few years back, and he still, you know, has these songs that, you know, N word, F word, C word.
I'm not up on my gutter music, so
yeah,
I don't know who you're referring to.
All you need to know is that he's one of the top selling artists in the United States, and he's one of the most profane, disgusting, misogynists. In my mind, the lyrics, he wouldn't say this, but are incredibly
I'm sure somebody,
meaning.
There are people, in other words, that Anderson Cooper would know.
Yeah, well, by the way, Anderson Cooper, nor MSNBC. MSNBC and CNN totally shut me out of any appearance on any of their shows.
Well, good. Good for you. I'm shut out from Fox News Network, which you're on. You have nothing to do with it. So, I mean, it does happen, Laura. You know that there's games being played.
During a book tour, they usually, you know, in the past, they would, you know.
Not me. I'm banned in Britain and banned from television.
I know. I'm trying to work up to your level, Michael, but I'm not quite there yet.
Well, okay. Hey, Laura, come on. Laura, really, tell me about TSA. What does TSA stand for? There's a new acronym. TSA.
Touch steel and something or other.
They really stole your cross?
They stole $15,000 worth of, I don't know if it was TSA, a Continental baggage handler, or some just random criminal who's apparently able to go into luggage, steal things, and then put it back on the conveyor belt. I have no idea. But yeah, I lost a lot of luggage in Newark on this trip. But let me tell you what happened with the hip hoppers. So Chris Brown, I went after him because he had this big concert at Rockefeller Plaza on the Today Show, and 20,000 people, most of them young women, show up for this concert. Okay, now here's the guy who beat this girl to a pulp, who has the most incredibly misogynistic, horribly profane, demeaning lyrics about women. Okay. And I did a big riff on it. You know, I just went off on it, and it dovetails off of what I read about in Of the Izing. So he sends his posse after me, and I'm talking 2.3 million Twitter followers started blasting me on Twitter, and again, proving my point, every cuss word, swear word, in the book use. I mean, you know, they should have, you know, they, you know, Fox shouldn't give you anything. You B word, you C word, you.
Well, we know what the level is of people who listen to that kind of music to begin with. They're born Obama supporters and believers. I mean, what do you need to know?
No, and then Chris Brown and 50 Cent, you know, the other thugs.
Where are you going next, Laura? Come on, tell me about your book tour.
Well, tonight. So tonight I'll be in Minneapolis.
I don't do book tours. I did them when I was younger, honestly, and I didn't like them very much.
You know something? You and I have to do some book signings together just for the hell of it.
Oh, God, no. Security issues prohibit it, number one. I'm a terrible traveler. I don't like putting on shirts and ties. I cannot stand hotel. I can't sleep in a hotel room. I don't care how clean it is.
Get the violins out. Come on, get the violins.
Can you sleep? And come on, let's be personal. Can you sleep in a hotel room?
Not great.
But, you toss and turn, right? You're looking at that digital clock, right? It's 2:13 now, correct? Then it's 2:14.
It is always 2:13.
It's always 2:13.
So, Michael, listen to what happened to me.
Well, you don't even have a Gideon Bible anymore. There's no Gideon Bible. There's nothing in the room for you to hold on to anymore.
Listen to what happened to me yesterday. I go to Costco. I know you've probably never been in a Costco.
I know. I love Costco. They sell all of my books. They do a great job.
Okay, so I went to Costco in Edina, Minnesota, okay?
Say that again. What town?
Edina, which is it's a really nice suburb of Minneapolis, okay? It's a beautiful suburb. Nice people. So I go into Costco with a friend of mine, and we're buying some stuff for my kids, you know, diapers, all this stuff. Go in there, and I said, I'm going to go look at the book and see if the book's here. So there was a ton of books, my book, of the I Zing, all stacked up. And I decided, I might as well sign these while I'm here, right?
Yeah.
So I started signing them. The manager.
You got arrested, probably. You got arrested for vandalizing your own books.
No, so people did start gathering around, like, what is this crazy woman doing signing these books? So this guy comes up, and I saw him out of the corner of my eye, and he looked like such a typical middle-aged, malcontent liberal. He had, like, black dyed hair. He's probably, like, 52. Had three earrings on his ear.
Wait, hold it. You're in Minnesota. Was that Al Franken?
Well, listen,
off duty?
He actually looks a lot like Al Franken, except he didn't have that weird stutter. So he says, I see you clerk for a Supreme Court justice. Which justice did you clerk for? And I looked at him, and I knew it was trouble. I looked at him, I said, Justice Thomas. He said, he's the worst justice of all the justices. I said, oh, really, which opinion of Justice Thomas do you really take issue with?
Yeah.
And it was like dead silence.
Right.
Laura,
that is called prejudice, prejudging. He prejudged him because he's a black man. You know, liberals basically say this but do that. You know the game, don't you?
Intolerant. I said, I thought liberals were supposed to be tolerant. And he said, oh, well, no offense, but he's the worst justice. Good luck on your tour. And I said, good luck with liberalism. It's going down in flames.
Shake his hand?
Are you kidding me? I'd shake his hand. I don't have Purell.
So where are you going, Laura, after tonight? What's next? How many more cities are left on the whistle stop tour?
2 days of vacation. Okay, that's
enough. No, wait. Come on, Laura, you're not helping me out. You're in Wisconsin. How many days have you been on a tour now? 12?
I was on a tour for like 2 weeks, and I took a break. I couldn't stay away from my kids. And I'm just doing one stop in Minnesota, and then I'm going to do a couple of things in the fall. I'm going to make you do a book signing with me somewhere.
But wait a minute, what about the West Coast? You don't do a West Coast tour at all?
I'll come out there.
I didn't invite you. I'm saying, are you not doing one on this?
I did one out in the Nixon Library down in Yorba Linda in California, but I haven't gone up to
grim. That sounds so grim. That sounds so incredibly grim. What are the people like in the Nixon Library? They're all very, very gray and grim, aren't they?
No, I looked out at the crowd and I said they were very nice. I looked out at the crowd and I said, I just want you to know that 13 minutes of this address is missing, so we'll be.
Of your dress? Yeah. Oh, address.
This address. The tape is missing.
I thought the TSA got into your luggage again. I didn't know what you were referring to.
No, just saying like that. You know,
I thought they took 13 minutes off your dress.
No, of the address.
Come on. I'm pulling your skirt, Laura. I'm trying to have a good time here.
Oh, you're lifting up the skirt. I get it.
Well, you stop being so serious. Can't you see I'm trying to have fun here? What's wrong with you?
Well, first of all, okay, so where are we doing our book tour?
I'm not doing a book tour.
Yes,
I don't do book tour.
Okay.
No, my publisher. No.
Okay.
My publisher's
call into the Savage.
Laura, it's in my contracts. Laura,
call in right now.
My contracts say that I don't have to do book tours.
I know you don't have to, but why don't we just do two stops together? I don't have to sign any books. I don't care. I just want to be there to watch you on the book tour, and just have to deal with just all the regular.
No, you see, I wouldn't deal with them the way you do. You are a very intelligent woman, but you also have the ability to deal with people like that in a very nice way. I wouldn't even talk to them. I need somebody between me and them. I mean, you went out there with no security, nothing.
No, I had no security. I had my book in front of me. That's all. That was my security. And it's just, but you know, something. It's good because you see how you.
Where are you, Laura? Are your kids with you in the hotel? You have your kids with you?
I'm at my friend's house who went to Dartmouth with me and his family. So we're all bunked up. It's like the Brady Bunch here. So he and his wife.
Is he married with children himself?
Yes, he is. He and his wife are like my best friends. They have three kids. So my three kids and his three kids. It's literally like an insane asylum.
So you come home from a book signing and your children are waiting?
Yeah, of course they're waiting. They're like, where's
but
mom?
They, I mean, they're young. They're young children. How old are they?
6, 3, and 14 months.
All right. So you go from being famous talk show host, author, you go home to the kids, and then what do you do with them at night?
Well, I play monster games at night. So I chase them all around the house screaming.
That's very nice. It's very nice to have young children around. I have a poodle. That's about it.
Oh, I love your poodle.
I get on the floor with Teddy. I look in his eye. I tickle his nose. I have a lot of fun with him.
No, he didn't bite me, so I figure that's a good sign.
You met Teddy? Oh, in Florida. That's right.
Oh, thanks. And I met Teddy in San Francisco. You don't even remember when Teddy was completely in my lap. Teddy loved me.
Wait a minute. I don't remember that at all.
Okay. All right.
All right, Laura, where are you signing books tonight? Laura, where are you tonight? Tell everybody where you are tonight. Where are you tonight?
I'm at the Edina Barnes & Noble in Minnesota.
Edina? Is that a diner? I mean, like in Diner? By that movie?
Edina.
You're in
Minnesota.
I think you've been hanging around with those rap artists too long. You're in the Edina? I mean, what is this?
I'm in the Edina, all right?
All right, Laura. Good luck with the of the Laura, good luck with of the I Zing. I hope you sell a million copies.
Oh, you're the best, Michael. I can't wait to our book tour.
Yeah, right. Okay, you'll be waiting a long time. The time is 46 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the one and only, the antioxidant of radio, Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It always seemed astounding to me how jolly they were in our family, despite the calamities that were always threatening. Jolly in spite of everything. There was cancer, dropsy, cirrhosis of the liver, insanity, thievery, mendacity, buggery, incest.
I love him, man, Henry Miller. How can you not love this man? How can you not love Charlie Parker and Henry Miller? How can you live in a world without Charlie Parker and Henry Miller? How could you live in a world of illiterate rap artists? How can you live in a world with Anderson Cooper as opposed to a broadcaster with brains? How is it possible? I got one hand on the moon and the other hand on Mars. Some would say I'm reaching for the stars. Play the music. Play the music. Senza fine. Michael Savage, Senza fine, without end. The making of many radio shows, there is no end. I'm the living embodiment of Ecclesiastes. One show into the other. One show into the other. A blur of 16, 17 years. I don't know when I began. 94, 2011. God in heaven. Seems like yesterday. Seems like yesterday. First show. I remember the first show. I'm sitting here like late in life, I did radio. I mean, nothing worked for me at a certain point. I was locked out because of affirmative action. They wouldn't hire me. They said white males need not apply. We only need people with lower qualifications in order to make certain that they can wreck the society. And so, therefore, I was basically having to do it my own way. And I sent a tape out to 428 radio stations, and five radio stations said, hey, you're good. Who are you? You know, come work for us. One was in Boston, I remember, and one was in San Francisco, and the rest is history. It's one long blink. It's amazing to me. So what motivates me? What motivates me at this point is Obama. What motivates me are the free radicals like Obama and Harry Reid and all of the other leftists who are destroying this economy and destroying the society while pretending that they are the antioxidants. They are the free radicals who have invaded the cells and are causing the infection. They've turned this into Greece or Belgium or Italy right in front of our eyes. And guys like me get up there, and we're the antioxidants out there to save the cell. And they castigate us and turn us into the problem itself. Unbelievable to me. Play the jazz music, or else I don't know where I'm going to go with this, and I don't want to go in a certain place. You know what I want to go out with in this hour? I want you to play the Symphony Sid piece. I think I'm in the mood, since it's August, I get to play around a little on radio. No one's listening in August. Everyone's on vacation. They're in Antarctica, Tierra del Fuego. They're in Provence. What are they doing in Provence? They couldn't do in Sonoma or Marin County. Why do people go to Provence? I don't understand it. If you go to Provence, you can come to San Francisco and go up to the wine country and rent a house. Even if it has a little stone in it, you're going to have the same exact thing. You're going to get drunk and make believe you're sipping wine, but really you're just a lush. I love these little stores that are around now all over America, wine tasting stores. Basically, when I was a kid, they were like rummy bars in Queens. You know, the worst characters in the neighborhood didn't have jobs, like postmen would sneak in there in the middle of the day and they'd have like a quick scotch or something, like a Seagram 7, and go out in their route. Garbage men would go in there. You know, they called them bar, a gin mill, okay? Now they change things from gin mill to a wine bar. Same thing, people who are addicted to alcohol, who do you think is in there? Tell you, let me have that one, let me taste this one. I'll have a sip of this, I'll have a sip of that. Basically, it's alcoholism. Nothing wrong with it if that's what you want. It's like a pot club. That's all. Can you play what I asked you for? Jumping with my boy Mike in the Nation. We have that yet? With my boy Mike in the Nation. With my boy Mike in the Nation. With my boy Mike in the Nation. Mm-hmm. My boy Mike in the Nation. With my boy Mike in the Nation. Jumping with my boy Mike in the Nation. Let her roll. Remember Symphony Sid? I used to make drive over the 59th Street Bridge, coming at 3 o'clock in the morning. I had to go to college the next day, go to work. But people still do that. I don't understand this. I know guys my age who go to Latin clubs. I don't know what they're going there for. How can they do it? They go there with guys 20 years old. The girls are 20 years old. No one sleeps at that age. They're partying all night, and they go to work in the morning, but they have menial jobs. If you're a serious person, you can't be out in a club at 3 o'clock in the morning. Who do you think you are, a Hollywood actor who's on drugs and then they're in rehab and you're supposed to care about it? Every day is a morning after to them. But I do remember those nights coming home late at night over the 59th Street Bridge. There was a Silver Cup bread factory. Now it's a movie studio, I think. De Niro owns it. I don't really know. It's a movie factory there. There was that Silver Cup bakery and you'd smell the bread being baked. And you knew you were 6 minutes away from the exit on the LIE that you turned and you get home and Mom and Pa were sleeping upstairs and they'd be asleep while you turn that key left in the mailbox. And you take your shoes off so no one would bark, mainly the dog. And you'd go in the house and there was the smell of home and you knew you were safe and the country was run by men who loved America. Yeah. And you knew the military was the strongest on earth. And you knew your mother the next day could walk to the supermarket without being mugged. Yeah, and you knew that people feared the police because they'd get a good beating and be thrown in the back of the car and come out black and blue, and they wouldn't dare mug a woman or hurt a child. Yeah, those were the days, my friends. And on Sunday, there was a church on the corner, and the New York Times would be stacked up to the sky, and the churchgoers would walk past the window to absolve themselves of the sins they committed on the way to the church, and they'd commit the same sins on the way out of the church. Yes, I remember those days well, my friends. So now play a little bit more of Symphony Sid before I say something I don't want to give away. I'll tell you about the time I brought home the fetal pig in the refrigerator. When I was studying comparative anatomy, and my aunt almost went crazy. She found it in the fridge, stuffed in behind the gefilte fish. I never told you about the fetal pig, did I? She was reaching for the food, and there was something in a wrapper. She didn't know what it was. Little did she know, it was Michael came home from comparative anatomy with a fetal pig.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity.
Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Look, today we're talking about the rise and fall of the United States of America. It's been calculated that all democracies that existed prior to ours lasted between 225 and 250 years. As you probably know, we just celebrated our 235th anniversary as a nation. As a result of the grotesque entitlement state, we're likely to disappear within a very short period of time. The only way America can be saved is by understanding that the entitlement mentality and the largesse of the state proposed by Obama, Harry Reid, and the entire pack of Democrat socialists will destroy this country as sure as I'm speaking to you right now. The entitlements must be reined in or this democracy will end. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of this message. All right, play the clip.
There is no dialogue. And to take the leader of the free world and embarrass him in front of the international community, most of us have dreamed and hoped for more. But the president was mugged. And when you survive a mugging, you don't talk about what happened to the president. You say, hey, we survived. And thank God that this great country has survived.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. Of course, the Presidente is getting ready for his 50th birthday party, a massive campaign event, where after talking about we all must chip in, we all must do our fair share, dinner will cost $35,600 to sit with this clown, and a picture with the clown will cost $10,000. Who in the world believes this man? Who in the world believes this man? It's a conspiracy of idiots. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to michaelsavage.com, as a matter of fact, and see what's on .com. .com. Top left. Our president. After attacking billionaires, Obama goes to them for money. Diving into the pockets of the millionaires and billionaires he attacked the day before. He's trying to hit them up for money. On the right. Savage says America has been hoodwinked. Have you read the article yet? Well, do so at your... Don't read it at your own risk. China joins Russia in blasting U.S. borrowing. Seems even the communists are more capitalistic than Obama, Reid, and Pelosi. Billionaires for Barry. White House report to detail anti-extremism effort. It's aimed at white males, not at Muslims. Which side is the government on? Not your side. Air Force drops ethics training because of Bible verses. It's amazing to me how one degenerate vermin by the name of Weinstein could do this. Is that his name, Beowulf? Weinstein? I wanted to ask Mr. Weinstein, who sued the Air Force to drop the ethics training because of Bible verses. I wanted to ask Mr. Weinstein a simple question. I would say, Mr. Weinstein, do you think your ancestors would have been led into this country if people like you founded it? Ground Zero Victory Mosque pusher working the peons. Read the article. Mubarak testifies from gurney and cage. This is while Syria is tanking and bombing their citizens. We're focused on the Arab Spring that never existed in Egypt, a conspiracy of Obama, Soros, Jimmy Carter, and MSNBC. Secret society revealed. Now Obama vows to raise taxes. Deal added $7 trillion to the debt. The Americans rejected the debt ceiling deal. Putin says the U.S. is a parasite on the global economy. Muslim punches man for taking photos. No charges against her. Because they're sacred cows in Toronto. a Muslim dressed in a cloak covering her entire body, slapped him in and tried to knock his camera to the ground for taking a picture of her in her throwback costume. And the police in Toronto would not press charges against her. Also on the website, on death row for 33 years, yet liberals are trying to save a cop killer from execution. That's linked up from the Miami Herald. New Yorkers fleeing the state. Taxed-out New Yorkers are voting with their feet, and they're moving to tax-free states like Florida, Texas, and God knows where. San Francisco to close Golden Gate Bridge to tourists to let bike gangs rule the lanes. And finally on my website, Mideast HIV epidemic emerges as sex between men is fueling the spread. Really? Sex between men in the Middle East? How can that be? Read the article. It goes on all the time. And on the bottom left, Savage to make his fiction debut with Abuse of Power, order it on Amazon.com. I want to say something that's actually a milestone in publishing. It's never happened before, so far as I know. And I really don't need anybody out there to say anything, really. I'm going to tell you what reality is. Do you know that this book was number 143,000? It was pre-publication listed on Amazon. And it was way up there, 143,000. In other words, no one even knew it existed. Do you know that with only a few short mentions on the Savage Nation and reading only a few segments of it, the book jumped to number 34 overnight? It is a publishing phenomenon. And who did it? You, the Savage Nation, the most loyal audience in America. Do you realize I did this without any help from any website? I did it without any help from Fox News or CNN or MSNBC or ABC or CBS or NBC. I did it strictly with you, the Savage Nation audience. And the reason I'm telling you this is twofold. One, because I want you to know what power you have to affect change. And number two, I want you to understand that you can change things in this country. We together have changed things, and we can change things. We are a powerful force. The Savage Nation is a very powerful force.
Savage.
Currency is in free fall. The economy is in a disastrous state. Gasoline's $5 a gallon and heading higher. The war in Afghanistan is being lost because of lack of willpower on the part of the leaders. There's no leadership. There's no commander in chief. He's invisible. When has he last given a speech to the troops? Go out and kill the enemy. Go out and mop up the floor with those bastards, those throwbacks. He hasn't said that. Which side is he on? He was reluctantly dragged into the Afghan war, so therefore the boys don't know what to do over there. They know if they actually do their job, they're going to get court-martialed. So where does all this come from? It comes from his political orientation. As I pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty, I'm going to read you one or two paragraphs. I'm going to go back now to something you need to know, which is his time at Occidental College. You must know this. And here's what I wrote. Just as Karl Marx aligned himself with a wealthy patron who picked up the tab for his lifestyle, Obama did the same thing while a student pursuing his Marxist ideologies at Occidental College. In a moment, I'll explain why this is noteworthy. Let's begin with Obama's choice of a roommate, Mohammed Hassan Chandu, a wealthy Pakistani student. John Drew, Obama's contemporary at Oxy, wrote this. He wrote, "When Barack Obama was a young man at Occidental College his sophomore year, he had a very wealthy patron in Hassan Chandu. They had a wonderful big house where they threw lavish parties. Chandu was throwing the money around. Obama was dressed in the nicest, slickest clothes. I thought they were both wealthy." Dr. Drew recalls going out to dinner with Obama and his roommate, Chandu, in Chandu's BMW, while arguing for hours about the merits of Marxism and Leninism over drinks and cigarettes. And then he says, "Obama was arguing a straightforward Marxist-Leninist class struggle point of view, which anticipated that there would be a revolution of the working class led by revolutionaries who would overthrow the capitalist system and institute a new socialist government that would redistribute the wealth," close quote. Then I write, do you see the irony? On one hand, Barack Obama, a student who comes from a broken home and with no visible means of support, was living high on the hog, compliments of his rich roommate. On the other hand, Obama was arguing about the merits of redistributing the wealth to end class struggle. Doesn't that strike you as bizarre, if not downright hypocritical? He and Marx had a lot in common. Both suffered from a severe case of class envy, coupled with an entitlement mentality. Each wanted the good life, neither wanted to work for it. Both were happy to sponge off someone else. And so it should come as no surprise that when Obama's patron saint pulled out of town, that was his cue to move on to greener pastures to find another sugar daddy. Here's how Dr. Drew saw it. Quote, when Obama knew that Chandu was going to leave Occidental College, he knew that the money supply was gone. The big house was gone. The parties were done. And he thought it was better for him to get the heck out of there and go to Columbia, because Chandu wasn't financing his lifestyle anymore. I don't believe Obama was ever able to create that same charismatic presence on the Columbia campus. Now, I spend a few other pages on pages 78, 74, 5, 6 on Obama at at the College Occidental and then at Columbia. And it's all about his love affair with communism, Marxism, and what Obama wants to do to America, and what, frankly, he would be doing had he not been derailed by the Tea Party movement and the elections of November. If you don't think you've had an effect, you're wrong. But I'm warning you about something right now, just to pull away from BO's BC. By mere dint of the fact that the radical left, the scum, the union vermin, are now attacking Republicans at town hall meetings, is the fact that they're going to do what the classic what communists have done through the ages and in every other country. They're going to get thuggish. They're going to try to shout us down. They're going to try and shout down anyone who stands for the free market. And that is why I'm calling upon you to do what those young Cuban Americans did back in 2000, when they scared the heck out of those cowardly lawyers from NYU and Columbia and Harvard who went down to rig the election for Al Gore. Do you remember that picture? I'll never forget it. Of the Cuban Americans with the white shirts in Florida banging on the glass walls where the ballots were being counted. They scared the boys with the big glasses, and they did their job correctly rather than their jury rig it. And that's what you need to do. You've got to fight fire with fire. You cannot sit back and listen to the radio. You're going to have to start going to the town hall meetings again. You're going to have to start organizing again. You're going to have to get in the faces of these thugs, and you're going to have to do it to save this country, because they're on a road to destroy the free market and to destroy everything that we stand for. Now, I just want to put one caveat in this. When I say free market, I'm not talking about a crony capitalism of the type that Obama is supporting. He's in New York, and he went not to root for the Chicago White Sox, but to visit the New York Greenbacks. He has gone to the same well three times this month. Who are these people giving him these millions and millions and millions of dollars? I don't know. The list hasn't been released. That's another part of his secrecy. My surmisal, my guess, the hedge fund manipulators, the pirates of Wall Street, those who are out of control with power and with greed, who must be stopped by reintroducing the uptick rule. Again, you want to know what the uptick rule is? I spent over a year researching and writing Trickle Up Poverty. I'm not here to sell you a book. I'm here to sell you an outline of what you need to understand in order to intelligently fight this communist who is in the White House. Do you understand that? Chicago Matt, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, what a pleasure it is to speak with you. I got to tell you, one of the reasons I love listening to you is some of your brilliant insight into life issues. You had said something earlier that I'd never heard anybody else say. You used the term wife and mother, and you called them verbs, which I
yes.
couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. See, you caught that. You understood that they are verbs.
They are absolutely verbs. I have six children, five of which God is continuing to allow us to raise here. One we believe and hope is in God's presence, and we adopted our bottom two. They're African American, and you know we have these people you know chiding us and saying you know what about their biological mother? What about their biological father? You know it occurred to me that you know those terms biological father and biological mother mean absolutely nothing. Because of what you said, because father and mother are verbs. It's the person.
Oh, well, now I think you're pulling my leg now.
No, I'm serious. I swear to you.
What do you mean father and mother have that? Well, I said that the father suffers postpartum blues the same way the mother does. He's emotionally drained after a birth. I didn't actually say father and mother are interchangeable.
No. What I'm saying is generally speaking, father and mother, they're verbs in the sense of those are the people who are doing the loving, caring, protecting, defending, and providing. Biological mother.
Well, but they have somewhat different roles. The man cannot give birth to a baby. Do we agree on that, or we have to discuss that?
I totally agree on that.
All right, so there's a difference in roles between a man and woman. I mean, let's start with the basics, since everyone seems to have forgotten the basics. A man cannot give birth to a baby, despite what the ACLU would probably would like to sue over.
Right.
Okay, and saying, well, they're equal. They're not equal. There's a biological difference between the male of the species and the female of the species. The way it was presented to me by a rabbi many years ago was the father is the house band. He took a phrase husband and changed it to house band. The father puts the band around the house and keeps it together. But that's a separate story. I was talking about the biological, physiological, the biophysiological effects of a childbirth upon the father, which is never, ever discussed. Nobody ever talks about the effects of the gestation period on the father. And the effects upon the father. The mother, of course, bears the largest brunt of those effects. Childbirth is a terribly difficult thing for a woman, and everyone should be prepared for it. It's not the joyous experience everyone's talking about. However, the father also suffers from it, is what I was saying.
Right. And I got that. My point was just that there, the father's role in a children's life must be active. You can't just be a biological father and call yourself father.
Of course not. That today is like a dog. I once knew a so-called poet who was a so-called writer in so-called North Beach of so-called San Francisco, where so-called fake writers live, who sit in so-called cafes pretending they're writing in so-called journals to collect crazy checks. And he said to me, we had a big fight once, and we threw drinks in each other's face in a bar. And he said to me, I'm a father, too, because I had children. I said, you're a father like a dog. I said, all you did was bear a child, your father. I said, a dog is more of a father than you.
That's exactly.
Was I wrong? What kind of father impregnates a woman and leaves and does nothing for her?
That's why I love it.
That's not a father. A dog sticks around longer than most men today.
Savage.
Alex Brill is the former senior advisor and chief economist to the House Ways and Means Committee. Alex also served on the staff of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. Alex Brill, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, what are your thoughts on this horrific debt deal?
In general, I'm pleased that we're taking a step towards spending less instead of spending more. For too many years, we've raised the debt limit in the middle of the night, tied to some spending increase bill. This is the first time in my memory that we reversed that trend, put together a package that cut spending. Does it cut it enough? Not in my opinion, but this is a process that could be repeated over and over again to ultimately shrink the size of government considerably.
Okay, if you could change anything about the deal, what would it be?
Well, the piece that I wish that had been included explicitly in this deal would have been reforms to our entitlement programs. We can cut discretionary spending, and that's a step in the right direction. But the real problems we face are Social Security and Medicare. There's an opportunity for some of those reforms to come in this supermajority super committee that will be established in the fall. But I really wish that issue had been tackled right up front.
What exactly is this trigger they keep talking about? What trigger? I thought trigger was dead.
In November, a new super committee, which will comprise of 12 members of Congress, 6 from the Senate and 6 from the House, 6 Democrats and 6 Republicans, will be expected to report out recommendations to cut spending an additional $1.2 to $1.5 trillion. If that committee can favorably report out these recommendations, meaning that they can garner 7 of the necessary 12 votes, then the recommendations automatically go to Capitol Hill. They are promised a vote in both the House and the Senate. And if they pass, one would expect that the president would have no choice but to sign that deal. If the commission, if the committee rather fails, either because they can't get seven votes on a deal, or if their recommendations are voted down by Congress, then a trigger kicks in that forces automatic spending cuts across the board. Now, those spending cuts are tilted slightly more towards defense than non-defense. About 10% of the cuts will about 10% reduction in defense spending, about an 8% reduction in non-defense. One of the disappointing aspects of this is that Medicare cuts will be capped at 2%. Either way, we'll get a deal that results in this trillion-plus reduction in spending over the next decade. If the committee is able to be successful, that spending can be structural. We can change the programs. We could eliminate programs. We could do things in a smarter or better way. If the committee fails, we are left with an across-the-board cut, meaning that the inefficient, ineffective programs that exist today in the federal government would continue to exist. We would just pay them less into those programs.
Okay, so what type of entitlement reform is needed, like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security? What would you do? I know what I would do.
There's a whole range of issues with regard to Medicare and with regard to Social Security need to be addressed. On the health care front, individuals need to take more responsibility for their own health care. That, in my opinion, can be realized in a variety of ways. For one, I think people simply have to be more responsible and more healthy. They have to have more skin in the game and recognize that their own decisions affect their own health outcomes. From a more practical perspective, I think this means that they have to pay more for the health care. When health care is nearly free, when the government is paying the vast majority of the services that a beneficiary is receiving, there is less incentive for the beneficiary to be more responsible themselves. So increased cost sharing, this means could be higher copays, for example, more out-of-pocket funding, not necessarily for the poorest among us, but for those who can afford to pay those higher copays, they should be expected to pay there. In addition, obviously, these programs were set up decades ago when life expectancies were less. I think it would be appropriate and efficient to raise the retirement age for Medicare, bring it up to the age of Social Security, and for Social Security, bring it up a little bit further. Phase these changes in over time, so we're not affecting our grandparents today, but rather that we're affecting ourselves when we hit retirement. Compounded over time, these small changes can have significant impacts. Social Security payments could be adjusted so that the wealthy are not receiving the same benefits that they are today. We could means test the program, in other words. Medicare payments for certain providers are likely excessive. There's an opportunity for many healthcare providers to overcharge or overbill in the Medicare system. Taken together, these kinds of changes could put Medicare and Social Security back on a sustainable path.
What kind of tax reform will best fix the mess that this country is in?
Tax policy is critical here. That's not to say tax increases are critical, but the tax code itself has a big impact on the economy that we have, the decisions that people make, and ultimately the amount, ultimately the size of our economy, and therefore the amount of taxes that are paid. I think that Republicans are dissatisfied with today's tax code. They think it's unfair. They think it's complicated. And I think that many members of Congress, as well as many voters, don't appreciate the way that the tax code is encouraging and discouraging individual choice and freedoms. For example, there are just a myriad of preferences for buying an electric car instead of an ordinary gas car, or buying solar panels on your roof instead of a gas heater in your basement. These decisions are distorting economic freedom and choice, and they're costing taxpayers revenue, and they're making the tax code more complex. I think that there's an interest in Washington, among Republicans at least, to take a hard look at the tax code, clean it out, make it for what it's make it be for what it should be about, which is raising the necessary amount of money to fund the necessary expenditures. It does not need to be a tool for picking winners and losers in one industry over another, for giving preferences to homeowners instead of renters, for example. If we have an opportunity, and we may in the fall in this super committee, to take a hard look at the tax code, we could reform it in a way, either make an overhaul of the income tax system, where we would keep this concept of taxing income, but do it in a fair way, or take one step further, which would be even better, and move towards a consumption tax. If we made those steps, we would actually grow the economy. We could grow it by 5 or maybe even 10% in the long run. That larger economy will produce more and produce more tax revenue. But that's the way to fix the tax code, not by going in and simply jacking up one tax rate here or another tax rate over there.
Are there any chances that our debt will actually be downgraded? I mean, a lot of foreigners are pouring their money into this country.
That's a tough question, I think. I know the rating agencies wanted more than just an increase in the debt limit. They want to see Washington behave very differently in the future than it has in the past. A credible plan for moving forward on tackling these entitlement problems that I was describing and the massive size of our spending overall. I think that the plan that the president is going to sign, the John Boehner plan, plan is one that takes us in the right direction. If it satisfies the rating agencies, my gut is that it will, and that we'll avoid a downgrade, but it's not certain. And I think this is an issue that's going to hang over us, at least through the fall, through this super committee work. And the other thing to keep in mind is, no matter how successful we are this year, the debt limit will be back. It'll be back in 2013. We'll be having a similar argument. And the question will be whether we address the next debt limit increase with a similar approach that dramatically cuts spending, or is this a one-time opportunity? Depending on how we deal in the fall with entitlement reform and spending reform and how the politics plays out over the next 2 years, we may have the opportunity to repeat this program of spending reductions over and over again. If the rating agencies think that that's plausible, I think they're likely to keep our rating where it is. If they think that this is a one-time deal, then we're probably more likely to face a downgrade.
Alex Brill, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Thanks very much for having me.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Play the clip.
The new senators and the new members of Congress who came here, I welcome them all, but a result of the Tea Party direction of this Congress the last few months has been very, very disconcerting and very unfair to the American people. It stopped us from arriving at a conclusion much earlier, and we must go forward.
Hey, if you think that's bad, how about identity theft? What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now, 1-800-LOCK-485, and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call now. I went on the internet today because it's August already. I had enough of the politics of another book coming out. I'm burned out. So I started to look in certain areas of Placer County, California, which is has some of the most gorgeous lakes in the world. Gold Lake and other things like that. So there's campgrounds up there that are on Forest Service land that are on long-term leases that the owners have. They have like 5 cabins. You know, some of them are rather primitive. Beautiful log cabins that I dreamed about as a boy. No television, you know what I'm saying? So I said, well, why don't I buy one of those lodges with 5 cabins, you know what I'm saying, and invite nobody there, just be me and Teddy. Because I actually think at this phase of my life, I wouldn't be able to handle it. I don't think I could handle it anymore. Maybe when I was young, yes. But at this stage of my life, I don't think I could be alone in the woods anymore. I don't have a Thoreau thing in me. A lot of people go crazy, by the way, when they go back to nature. They don't tell you about that. Oh, yeah, it's a famous story. In the 60s, there was a couple. I forget who they were. They went back to nature. They were heroes of the liberals in the commie left, the peacenik back-to-earth movement. And they moved to Alaska to get away from it all, right? And they used to write articles. They lived 6 months in Alaska in the outback, and then 6 months they live in the Caribbean when it got cold. So, all right, they have it both ways. All right, it's their business. Eventually, the guy walked into a propeller blade of a plane. He couldn't take it anymore. Just him and his long-toothed wife, you know what I'm saying? And the mosquito. Him and the mosquito and the wife, he walked into the propeller of the plane that came to get him. This is the problem. You can't do the back-to-nature thing anymore. It's too late. Thoreau is dead. Sacramento, Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, greetings from all your fans born in 1981.
Hey, thank you.
Recently, I went on a hike way up in the hills there and found a crystal clear, ice-cold lake, and I went swimming in it, and it was one of the most refreshing things I can remember in the past. I wondered if you were a swimmer, and if you
I am. I'm a very good swimmer. I'm a former lifeguard. I haven't saved anybody's life, but I'm a former lifeguard. Yeah, I'm a very good swimmer to this day. And the question is what, Tony?
Do you take advantage lately of the ice-cold, beautiful mountain?
You know, you're raising a very interesting point. I've read that immersing yourself in ice-cold water, although it's shocking, is one of the most healthful things you can do. I have an aversion to cold water. I don't really like cold water, Tony. Maybe what I need right now is throw myself in San Francisco Bay. I don't mean off the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm saying pull my boat into a cove. It's 58 degrees, the water, though. That's the thing. It's cold.
No, go up to a lake up on Mount Lassen and take a dive.
Yeah, what's the water temperature in a lake up there?
I don't know, but it was perfect. Probably a little bit warmer than 58 degrees.
Okay. Well, I remember there was an area in Alpine Meadows, California, that's a stunning. There's an area called Five Lakes. You probably don't know that area. In 1980, I was hiking up there a lot with family when the kids were young. I even was able to backpack one of my children on my back all the way to the top of the lake. You get up there in August, there's still snow on the ground, which to me is miraculously beautiful. And the lake, the ice is finally melted out in late August. The water is like ice water. You know what I mean, Tony? And at that time, Mrs. S. swam in that lake. I couldn't even put a toe in it. Some people have a capacity for cold water. I don't have it.
You should try again.
Yeah, you mean maybe it'll snap me out of my malaise?
It might do something for you.
Yeah, it could give me a heart attack altogether. Or either way, it's better off than what I have now. Oh, God, I shouldn't get... Thank you for the... No, you got to be careful. I don't believe in shocking the system. I have my own exercise regimen. It consists in watching 5 to 6 hours of television after... No. I bicycle every day. I really do. I don't mean... You see, this is... I'm going to talk about exercise. Am I at a break point here or what? Where am I? I'm fine. I could talk for 3 minutes. Good. You know, a lot of guys drop dead in their 30s way back when from excessive running. They would run and look at the watches, bingo, blowout. So I was a runner when I was in my 30s. I weighed, you know, I was thin, low cholesterol, runner. Till one day I was running up to a waterfall. Every day I'd run to a waterfall. And I heard an inner voice screaming at me, stop running, stop running, stop running, stop running. So I thought I went crazy. So I stopped running. Never ran again the rest of my life. My body was warning me to stop running. And then in that decade, there were a lot of very famous deaths of runners. Jim Fix, for example, was a very famous runner. He wrote for Runner's Magazine, and he dropped dead while running. So you say, well, what does that prove? I'm not saying it proves anything other than the body is not made for continuous stress of this kind, the kind that people put themselves through with exercise. So as time went on, I started to study different methods of what's considered to be exercise. And the Chinese have it right. The ancient Chinese had it exactly right, which is the moderate approach to it. No excessive pushing of the body. At least that's what I interpreted it to mean. I mean, maybe it's my own interpretation. So if I bicycle, I bicycle moderately, not until I'm in a sweat bath and looking at a watch. I'm not doing it to sweat. I'm doing it to get some balance in my body. Balance is one of the most important things you can get in your body. So bicycling is excellent for gaining balance alone, even if you just do it to keep your balance. I bicycle all my life, by the way. If I miss a day, I don't feel good. A couple of miles to town and back, go to look at people down in the mall, see what's going on, women, children, men, vendors. You know, it's like a touch of life. It's a real town. In a modern American suburb, the mall is actually our town, since there's no towns left to speak of. It's as good a town as any. So anyway, bicycle, look around, push around, get some, you know, yard time, go back to the prison of the computer and radio. But when it comes to pushing your body, I believe that many young men have it wrong, and they really push themselves too hard. They push and they push and they push and they run for a certain amount of time. They look good, don't get me wrong. They're thin, they're lean, they're in good shape. But I'm not so sure that that is so good to sustain for a very long period of time in your life. Moderate, moderate, moderate. And all you got to do is talk to an orthopedic surgeon about it if you think I'm making this up. The joints will go from excessive pounding. The hips, the joints are going to be replaced early on from the running. So there are other less, what do they call it? There's a word, less impact kind of sports that you can practice. But it's the same with weightlifting. You don't have to crunch weights for 5 hours a day. I mean, unless you're a Navy SEAL or something like that, or an Army Ranger or one of those. Of course, you want to be as hard as a rock. But I'm talking about the average person who wants to keep reasonably fit after the age of a certain age. That's all. You don't have to overdo it. That has been my philosophy. And thus far, it's worked for me. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I think that everyone has to come to their own ideas about what's going to work for them. And it comes back to the jumping in a cold lake. Now, maybe that's good shock therapy.